And on this very windy Thursday morning, we welcome in Jared Bond. Good morning, Jared.
Good morning. I made my way here.
I didn't get blown off the road. It's something out there this morning. We just got news of an 81-mile-an-hour wind gust recorded at Blue Hill this morning. And once again, those winds will be dying down in about an hour or so, but certainly strong out there this morning. And, Jared, we're here to talk about the art scene around Boston this weekend. We're starting out with a person that I've never heard of, John Wilson. Tell us about him.
I hope that everybody gets to hear about John Wilson now, not only see his art, which is incredible, but hear his story, because in academic and art circles around the country, he certainly is well known. I mean, this is a man, he grew up in Massachusetts, he grew up in Boston and Roxbury, and from a very, very early age, and I should point out, he's 90 now, and he has a retrospective at the Danforth Museum in Framingham. It's called John Wilson, Eternal Presence, on view through March 24th. And he started doing Roxbury streetscapes when he was just a kid. He said he was documenting. He was trying to get at what his life was like in Roxbury and what he calls was a ghetto and just teeming with kids and teeming with life and activity. And immediately people started to identify that he had this immense talent. He had gone to the Roxbury Boys Club, and there were tutors there from the School of the Museum of Fine Arts. They brought him into the school. The museum recognized his talent, globbed onto it, and put him into the school, and that's where he really started to flourish. I mean, it was incredible what he was able to do there. And this was at a time in the 30s. A lot of his Jewish peers were starting to hear what was coming out of Europe and learning about the Holocaust. So these were images that they were depicting, and that in turn, I think, informed what he was doing, because he was dealing with segregation. He was seeing what was happening to the African-American community here. And so he renders these extremely searing portraits of, you know, the human condition, the African-American condition. I had the opportunity to talk to Catherine French, who's the director at the Danforth, about this tenderness that you see in John Wilson's work.
There's not a sense of anger. So to be able to depict this, to be able to not be looking at scenes of parents holding children, I find those terribly poignant. As a poignant part of this, is a really revealing part of what this show is about, that there are many depictions of parents holding children. One of them is a mother holding a child as she's experiencing her husband being lynched. It's part of a larger piece. This awareness that there's evil in the world, that there's real danger, and yet this sense of tenderness, of wanting to protect.
Wow. You mentioned that John Wilson's work extends far and wide, including presidential attention, and there was some kind of connection to the recent inaugural?
Yeah, well, this is what's amazing. And even if you spend some time with John Wilson, you see that he's this bright spirit. He remembers so vividly everything that he's been painting and working on and the etchings that he's made. And he, in the 1980s and 1990s, started to look toward Martin Luther King and created this series of portraits, including a bronze bust. Last Monday, when the president was walking through the Capitol Rotunda, he paused and looked up at a bronze of Martin Luther King Jr., and that was done by John Wilson, which is just, I mean, it's fantastic that, you know, this child from Roxbury, and in a moment we'll talk about what happened in between to get him from there to the Capitol and the president's attention. But it's incredible that this man from Roxbury can have this sense of achievement, you know, especially on that day, Martin Luther King Day, African-American president. And I did talk to John Wilson about getting that image of Martin Luther King.
I wasn't trying to do just a copy of what he physically was, but to somehow make these interpretations of his body, his physical self, express what was going on inside of him, and also the feelings I got from how he talked about the world around him.
So if you look at this portrait of King, you won't necessarily see the man you know from the film reels, from the pictures, but what you see is, again, what Catherine French was just talking about, the sort of tenderness. You can see in his face this man who was the civil rights leader, who sort of embodied the spirit of a whole aspect of this country at a particular time. So that's what he's really working from, is an impression and not just the literal translation.
Now, his rise to fame seems unlikely given the racism he endured. How did he succeed?
I mean, it's Bob, it's so unlikely. That's what is so incredible about this story. Especially, there's one painting in this show. It's called Black Despair, and it's of his brother, who, of course, grew up with him in Boston, but then was sent to the South for basic training for World War II and experienced this just terrible segregation and terrible racism and treatment. And his brother came back to Boston at one point, and he just saw the despair that his brother was filled with. He saw the depression, and it really crippled his brother. And to see that John Wilson, you know, in many ways probably experienced many of the same things, but still managed to triumph and seek out opportunity for himself is what is so inspiring here, in addition to the fact that it's just incredible art. Because once he left the museum school, he had a fellowship that put him in Europe, and he was working under Leger. He sought out Leger in his studio, and this is at the time of Picasso and modernism, right. And cubists are emerging, and they're in contemporary art galleries. They aren't even in museums yet, so he's absorbing all of this, spends time in Paris, and then, as if that isn't enough, then he moves to Mexico, and he starts working with the muralists, and the artists in Mexico at that time, it's all about the graphic nature of the work and the printing and how they can use their work as a charge for social change. And then he finally returns to the United States in Chicago, New York, and then back to Boston, where he teaches at Boston University. I mean, it's just been this remarkable career. And as I said, he's 90 years old and he's still making prints.
Wow. Now, once again, where can people see these?
This is at the Danforth Museum of Art through March 24th. My colleague critics have also raved about this show. It is absolutely worth a visit.
And what about on our website? Can people see them there?
Yeah, we'll be posting pictures today, images, as well as a link to the Danforth Museum, so you can see these images. But again, they're one thing to see them on the web, but to experience them in person is another.
Fascinating. Okay, the work of John Wilson. Next, we turn to The Servant of Two Masters, being presented by Arts Emerson. They always have interesting things that they bring to Boston. What is this about?
Well, this is sort of like a theatrical Zoloft for us all in the despair of January. Well, until today, when it's really cold and gray and dreary, they brought us The Servant of Two Masters, which opened last night. It's playing through February 10th at the Paramount Center. This is Commedia dell'arte. I mean, it's hilarious. This is such a finely tuned production.
The original slapstick. Right?
Yes, exactly. You know, written by Goldini in Italy in 1743.
Wow.
And it's the basic plot. You have this very dim-witted servant who's trying to appeal to two masters that he's managed to get hired by just so he can have two salaries and two meals. And you're also dealing with star-crossed lovers, but it's complete slapstick. These really, really colorful costumes, these great masks, and the piece is filled with improvisation. So there's this high-running energy. Hmm. There are more jokes a second and minute than you're getting on my soon-to-be-departed 30 Rock. I mean, I was brought to tears at one point just in the description about how the food got to this major banquet table and them acting out the animals and how the animals were slayed to get to the table. I mean, it's just unbelievably funny, and they take aim at everything because it is improvisation. They try to make it Boston-centric, so ART is very much in their crosshairs, as is the Green Line, Beyonce, Senator Scott Brown. So it's a really, really fun production. It'll lift your spirits.
And who is doing it, actually?
This is Stephen Epp and Christopher Bayes. Christopher Bayes is a director from Yale Repertory Theater. If you saw The 39 Steps, which is at the Huntington, then went to Broadway, he did a lot of the choreography. Fantastic. And Steve Epp, is a fantastic actor.
All right. Presented by Arts Emerson, The Servant of Two Masters at the Paramount Center main stage through February the 10th. As always, thank you, Jared.
Thanks, Bob.
Have a good weekend. We'll see you next Thursday.